Thank you all for being here this afternoon at 4 o'clock. So I'm Brittany Fredrickson. I just finished my fellowship, CSC fellowship at the Iowa Department of Public Health, and I'll be presenting my work from that fellowship. And we collaborated with the Office of Population Affairs in the development of these measures and piloted them with Iowa Medicaid data. And so I now am at the Office of Population Affairs as an epidemiologist there. So why contraceptive performance measures? So we all know that about approximately half of all pregnancies in the U.S. are unintended. And we believe that efforts to prevent unintended pregnancy might be strengthened by integrating quality improvement processes into the delivery of clinical services. So holding providers accountable for providing the full range of contraceptive methods. And there are currently no National Quality Forum endorsed measures for contraceptive care. We really don't have any measures around contraceptive care. This was a huge gap area. And so the Office of Population Affairs has submitted 3 measures for endorsement. I'll talk about those 3 today. So method effectiveness. We know that contraception is a highly effective clinical preventive service intended to prevent teen and unintended pregnancies and spaced births. And the type of contraceptive method used by a woman is strongly associated with her risk of unintended pregnancy. There's a lot of literature around that. You've probably all seen this effectiveness of family planning methods chart. If you haven't, there's 3 tiers of methods. There's the most effective methods. That's the top tier. Those are the top tier. Those include the long-acting reversible contraceptives, the implants and IUDs, as well as sterilization. They have a failure rate of less than 1%, so they're highly effective. The second tier are the moderately effective methods. They have failure rates between 6 and 12%. They include the injectables like Depo, the pill patch ring, and diaphragm. And then your bottom tier are the least effective methods. Those are some of your barrier methods, withdrawal, natural family planning methods. And those have failure rates from 18 to 28%. Not using any method at all has a failure rate of 85%. So the performance measures for contraceptive use are based on the fact that some methods are more effective than others at preventing unintended pregnancy and are designed to encourage use of the most and moderately effective methods, those top 2 tiers. We also know that women really care about effectiveness of their contraceptive method. A study was done, it came out in 2016, of 1,800 women in family planning and abortion clinics across the United States. And 89% of women said the characteristic of a contraceptive method that was extremely important to her was the effectiveness of the method of preventing pregnancy. So the measures are based around effectiveness. So these are the 3 contraceptive care measures. I'll be talking about the first 2 today. The percentage of women aged 15 to 44 years at risk of unintended pregnancy provided a most effective or moderately effective FDA-approved contraceptive method. We consider this an intermediate outcome measure because it represents the decision that is made at the end of a clinical encounter about the type of contraceptive method a woman will use, and because of its strong association between type of contraceptive method used and risk of unintended pregnancy. The second measure is very different and used very differently. It's the percentage of women aged 15 to 44 years at risk of unintended pregnancy provided a long-acting reversible contraceptive method. This is an access measure, and we're really trying to get at whether women have access to these methods. Those of you that work in this area know that there are a lot of barriers to providing LARC methods. It could be stocking these methods. They're expensive. Some providers don't feel comfortable inserting them in nulliparous or teen moms, or teen women, I should say, not moms. So we want to know that women have access to the methods. So this would be looking at very low rates of use, less than 1 to 2%. The third measure takes both of these measures and applies them in the postpartum period. So it applies them to women who have had a live birth. And we're interested in looking at 2 time points, 3 days after delivery, the immediate postpartum period, and then 60 days after delivery, which would account for the receipt of it at the postpartum visit. So for this analysis, I used Iowa's 2013 Medicaid claims data. This included 44,750 women. And the measures, I won't go into the specifications for how each of the measures was specified, but we are creating a federal website at OPA right now that will have all of the measure specifications as well as the SAS code that I created to to calculate the measures. But they use a number of different types of codes, diagnosis codes, ICD-9 for this analysis, and then now they've been adapted for ICD-10. CPT codes, which are procedures, like a LARC insertion. HCPCS codes are devices. A lot of the LARCs end up in the HCPCS codes. And then NDC codes, which are drug codes. A lot of oral contraceptives end up with the NDC codes. So we have three exclusion criteria for these measures. We exclude women who are infecund for non-contraceptive reasons. They're unable to get pregnant. We can identify these through diagnosis codes in the claims, and this would be just for the current measurement year. We're focusing on one measurement year at a time, but I'll talk about there's a possibility for a look-back period. We also exclude women who are pregnant at the end of the measurement year because they're not at risk for unintended pregnancy. And then those whose pregnancy ended in the last 2 months of the measurement year. So it depends on if you're looking at fiscal year or calendar year. But if calendar year, if you had a birth within in November or December, we exclude you because you might not have had an opportunity to get postpartum contraception yet. The denominator for the measures is women ages 15 to 44 continuously enrolled in Medicaid. So this is a claims-based measure. We're looking for women that have no more than one gap in enrollment of up to 45 days, or you're receiving the family planning waiver, regardless of continuous enrollment, because these women are seeking out contraceptive services, so we want to include them regardless. So these are a few of the results and how a state might use these measures. There are a lot of states calculating the measures currently, and there's been a lot of questions about interpretation and how should we use these. So these are a few ways Iowa is using the data, and there are plenty of other ways, and I'd love to have that discussion if people want to talk about the ways they're using them. So I think a great way to use them is to look by health plan. So in 2013, Iowa was primarily a fee-for-service state. They had two managed care organizations. They've since this year switched to completely managed care. So I think this will be really important for them to look across their managed care organizations. I think they're planning on using it that way. But you'll see that the percentage of women with a fee-for-service plan had a much higher percentage of most and moderately effective contraceptive use compared to these MCOs. So I think this is really important information to give back to the managed care organizations and say, look how you're performing compared to women on a fee-for-service plan. Another way we've focused on looking at this is women who receive a family planning waiver versus general Medicaid. So general Medicaid, so Iowa provides family planning services to low-income individuals through two programs, the general Medicaid program, which covers individuals with incomes less than 133% of the federal poverty level, and then the family planning waiver, and this covers males and females aged 12 to 54 years who do not have insurance or their insurance doesn't cover family planning services. They also can have a family income at or below 300% of the federal poverty level. It's incredibly generous. And they, or if they've had a pregnancy, they get the family plan, and it was covered by Medicaid, they get the family planning waiver for an entire year after their delivery. So we did this analysis, and this is very descriptive, but just seeing the percentages based on whether you received the family planning waiver versus whether you were receiving general Medicaid. And they're much higher among women receiving the family planning waiver. Part of that's understandable because these women are seeking contraceptive services, but we also, if you look at adult women, only 28% of women receiving general Medicaid were using a most or moderately effective method. So I think there's a lot of room for improvement here. We've had a lot of questions about how do I interpret these measures once I've calculated them. And we know that these are not perfect measures. There are a number of limitations when you use claims data. So there are five main things that we cannot get at from claims data, but thankfully the National Survey of Family Growth can calculate. So we can't get at whether a woman has ever had sex, whether she's seeking pregnancy, infecund for non-contraceptive reasons, in a prior measurement year, received a LARC in a previous year, or was sterilized for a previous year, if we're only looking at one measurement year. So we can get these numbers from National Survey of Family Growth. Unfortunately, this is done at a national level and not at a state level. But you can calculate. We add, so this is our adjustment for the denominator. You add these five percentages together to get at a percentage of women not in need of contraceptive services. You can then add that percentage to your measure score. So we're proposing doing this with our general Medicaid population. And then we get at a percentage of women who have their contraceptive needs met. And then that would leave a performance improvement gap of 11% for adolescent women and 28% for adult women. I know this is kind of hard to grasp just briefly talking about it, but I'm happy to discuss it further later. As far as the LARC measure, we see something very similar to what we saw with the most or moderately effective methods. These percentages are much lower, and that's what we would anticipate, and we wouldn't expect high percentages of LARC use. And then the comparison by family planning waiver versus general Medicaid. General Medicaid is still much lower. But, I mean, it's encouraging to see that women are being offered LARC methods. So the interpretation of the LARC measure, we're not proposing to use National Survey of Family Growth data for this. The primary intent, like I said, is to identify barriers to access and identify very low rates of LARC use. Or you could identify entities where LARC use is well below the median or mean. So maybe you want to calculate this at a state level. And then in Iowa, we looked by public health region, and all of the regions had some coverage of LARC. So we, you know, weren't concerned. But in Title 10, we have some service sites that have 0% LARC use, and we want to investigate those further to see if there are barriers to providing LARC. So just a few limitations. Like I said, claims have difficulty identifying a denominator of women at risk for unintended pregnancy. We can't account for women who are using male sterilization, which is a lot of adult women. We're only focusing on female claims here. And we also know that a woman might have more than one partner. One might be sterilized, one might be not. So we're just focusing on the women's access to methods. And then it's difficult to account for previous sterilization and LARCs when only considering one measurement year, but lots of states have proposed a look-back period. I think that's a great idea. I think, though, for sterilization, since that's a lifetime contraceptive method, it's hard to get back, and we want to focus on women who are continuously enrolled in Medicaid, so if you're looking back 10 years, a lot of women might drop out of the denominator. The strengths, the measures are feasible and useful, and I'm really encouraged that a lot of states have been calculating them a lot. Crystal's going to talk about how they're using them in Wisconsin. Lauren from Vermont's here, and she's calculated them, so it's been really exciting. The claims data are relatively accessible and easy to collect and compile. I know states have issues getting them, so it's a caveat. They were easy in Iowa. And then it's great because claims document the actual service provided to the woman. Next steps. We're really excited because both measures, as well as the postpartum contraceptive care measure, were recently approved for endorsement by the National Quality Forum. We're now in a public comment period, and I'd encourage you, if you're passionate about this issue and want to see these measures go through, or if you have issues with the measures, go on and comment on the National Quality Forum's website. That'll be open until July 7th. And then CMS, they're funding 13 states currently and one territory to support state efforts to collect and report the measures, so it's really exciting. And we're currently developing an e-measure that will more accurately get at our denominator, and that's being piloted into Colorado Health Clinics. So hopefully we'll have data on those e-measures. And I'd just like to acknowledge my colleagues. Deborah Kane was my primary supervisor in Iowa. Denise Wheeler is our family planning coordinator in Iowa. And then Lori Gavin, who created these measures and is very passionate about them. So